Good evening.
Good evening.
It's Wednesday night
at
7 o'clock. Things happen at Wednesday night at 7 o'clock on the west coast of the continental United States every Wednesday night, except that one time when I drove off the road in the snowstorm. I wasn't able to make it. But other than that, and this particular part of everything that's happening is called the invocation of presence. And if you haven't heard about it, this is a early on volume. Ivan, if you look at the title page and the attribution page, you can tell us when the
When
it was. Whoops.
It's not there.
Our publisher. Our publisher is here with us, and is indicating that the best source of knowledge about when it was published is somewhere in his memory.
It wasn't published.
He actually saying it was never published.
It was never published.
We, however, have many copies here in English.
My copyright page is 1989, but that is after the fact.
That's way up the back.
Way after the fact.
We also have it in Espanol también.
Oh, muy bien.
Está aquí la invocación de la presencia.
I don't one of those. No one ever gave me one of those.
Yeah, well.
I never got one.
The insiders have it. That's right. Yeah, it was.
Before 1980, Marvette's letting us know.
Mid-70s that he worked on it and presented it, yeah.
This is from the cycle of the G-Talks, and that was 79, 80, 81, 82. Secret Talks, this is from that era. So it's 79, 80, 81, 82. One of those three or four years.
So the bibliographers are going to argue for years on end until...
Yes, until we pull out the actual.
And we don't know that. And for our part, as just students of the word, I hate to say it, Pat.
Yes?
But I don't really care.
Really? Is that the truth? You do not care?
Because I like what's in the volume immensely.
My dear friend, may I presume upon your friendship and interrupt your presentation with a small snippet.
You mean an advertisement?
No, sir.
Okay. Go ahead, because then I'm ready to go. You can open your Bibles to page 3.
This is from The Great Adventure, and it's from The Orchid, which blooms only when the moon is full. And the paragraph begins, this is a compelling reason why you should learn to refrain from your habitual human manifestations at all times and fully extend your sensing apparatus into the space into which you have moved. If you are unable to go with the flow, or as we say in the biz, mutate with the flux.
Mutate with the flux, kids.
Of what's happening in their chamber, you will immediately be picked up by their security system and flushed out of the space before you know what hit you. If any of you have ever had to use the toilet while under the influence of an interdimensional assisting agent, you can be sure that some aspect of your voyage took a wrong turn and you had to be jettisoned. My point being that in this text it says, fully extend your sensing apparatus into the space into which you have moved. I think that fits perfectly with
tonight. It's a great start for where we're going. It's perfect beginning. And if you recall, last time we kind of like cracked the beginnings of the shell on the egg, and we started on where it says the exercise, and then we went through the concepts that EJ describes at that point. And then We stopped about halfway down the column on the right of page 3
mm-hmm.
in this particular format.
Right.
And we're going to begin again, and we're going to actually read two paragraphs, and one of us is going to get up and demonstrate
mm-hmm.
the paragraphs being read after they've been read.
Mm-hmm.
So now turn down to the paragraph that starts with, "He then stood." Tell me when you've gotten there.
What page are we on, Dave?
Three? We've only made it to 3, Judy.
Oh, okay. Got it. Thank you.
What were those words again, David?
He then stood. It's in quotation marks on the right-hand side, but I see many of them are.
Harry, it's the second paragraph from the bottom.
That's right. He then stood. Are we there?
Oh, there it is. There you are. I got it.
Okay.
Thank you.
Do you have a phone, Ivan?
No.
Oh, well, we can get a phone. Dan has it.
Thank you, Dan.
Yeah.
And would you two like to read those two paragraphs?
Yes.
And Pat, would you start us off, please?
He then stood in front of the group in a bow and arrow pose, indicating the forward hand holding the bow. He said, "This hand represents the world of it, what we can call the present, the outer world, including our organic machine and its functioning centrum."
Ivan?
Drawing his other hand back in a smooth, swift motion, he added, "This other hand represents presence, becoming for the first time aware of its presence in the present, by drawing away from identification with events, by observing impartially and at the same time using subjective organic sensations to sense its own definite presence in the present."
I'm a little constrained here, Marvette, because on the one hand, I had a strong sense during the day that I wanted to demonstrate that. But I have no way of speaking while I'm demonstrating it. Should I just hold this in my hand then? What should I do?
If you want to stand up, we can...
I'm going to stand up.
Yeah,
like the mic by you. Now this, can you get me on the camera?
Well, we'll see. We'll just back up.
Because...
Yes, we're going to do a little demo that's going to call for...
And it's
going small adjustment.
Maybe
it'll take
just,
a minute or two.
Can I hold it?
So you might need your hand.
Yes.
You do need your hand.
We do this all the time.
Okay, but I'm going to also...
Yes, be in a posture.
Okay.
Yeah.
So maybe right here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, very good.
Well, not bad.
Oh, she's going to do that,
That's going to be a good
day? Yeah, that's, well, any height's okay.
Okay,
good. Now, the reason I'm doing it like this, I'm back and we're going to get me on camera, but I'm demonstrating something, is because it has such a tactile reality to it when I did it. I've been doing it since last class. Actually, I read further ahead, and I've been doing this. And it's fascinating to actually physically do it yourself. Right now we're meditating and go, "Oh yeah, I understand what he's saying." Yeah, we do. You do understand it. Now we're talking about a deeper understanding and actually the beginning of wisdom. Wisdom is
you incorporate it into yourself, and that's what we're talking about here. So what he's saying is, if he enters into the room, BJ was demonstrating this to his students, and he says he takes the bow and arrow, what does it say?
He then stood in front of the group in a bow and arrow pose.
So he might do something, might have done something like this. I have not seen him in a more classical Japanese pose, but I'm not. So he like this. He has a bow.
The microphone is too far
can
behind
you.
You have to pull the microphone towards you so it's in front of you.
Okay.
That's good.
So it would be, so he's taking a stance like this. Okay. And set the target for the arrow.
David, if you hold the microphone in your right hand and let it be the nock of the arrow, you can do it standing up and everybody can hear your talk.
The left hand, right. So, you do something like this, where you're facing, so you have the bow and arrow out here. So you pull the arrow back, this is important, you pull back the string. And then what happens then? Arrow takes off, right? Loose the arrow. Correct? Has anybody ever shot a bow and arrow?
I have, yeah.
I have many times. So you're in this posture, whatever it is, I mean it might be like this. And now you're engaged, right? You're engaged just like your attention is engaged with what might be in front of you. Loose the arrow. What happens with your attention at that time? When you pull the arrow, when you shoot the arrow, what happens? Where does your attention, not theoretically, what does it actually do?
When you lose the arrow,
your
attention flies with the arrow.
To the target. So you fly with the arrow to the target. That's all we have for demonstrations, Margaret. I'm sorry. Yeah.
No, it's good. It's good.
People caught it.
But I really want to consider doing that, a pose like that. Of course, it's not what you normally do every day, every second of the day. But you get it gets into your body, what we're talking about here, a little bit.
Well, I'm going to read again. While Marvette is getting the cameras and the microphones back, in case folks at home want to try this exercise, she then stood in front of the group in a bow and arrow pose, indicating the forward hand holding the bow. She said this hand represents the world of it, what we call the present, the outer world, including our organic machine and its functioning centrum.
Drawing his other hand back in a smooth, swift motion, he added, "This other hand represents presence, becoming for the first time aware of its presence in the present. By drawing away from identification with events, by observing impartially and at the same time using subjective organic sensations to sense its own definite presence in the present."
So this, in a sense, it's a startling line if you read that very last line of the second paragraph where he's saying, gosh, you know what? He's saying, this is the where's the first
For the first time, listen to this, aware of its presence in the present by drawing away from the identification with the events. Drawing away. So, now, you might think this is really simplistic, what we're talking about here, but in a sense, this is groundbreaking. And last week, we spoke a little bit about the concept of don't give yourself away. Don't lose yourself mm-hmm. in the external.
Mm-hmm.
And we are taught, and he actually says it in the next page, a few paragraphs, we're taught to be identified with the outside world for good reason, for very good reason. We don't want to get eaten, run over, beat up, stolen. So we are always looking outside. The problem isn't that, it's that we get identified with it. And we're only that. So we have a chance now for the first time to hold on to our presence. So can you loose the arrow and let the arrow go and watch it appropriately, watch the arrow hit the target, but you never lose the sense of self? What do you think about that? Dan, what do you think? Go ahead.
Yes, he has
the phone. Yeah. You know, we read in all the books about split attention and, you know, being in two places at the same time, and that your shaman travels from here to there.
I just know that my ability to accomplish that non-identification is very limited, but I have experienced it not through my own volition.
But there it is.
And it is very different.
It is different to do it like that, right? But can you imagine yourselves right now when you see this from an image, figurative point of view, and actually get up out of your chair and physically feel that motion of your muscles doing that? And you can imagine letting the arrow go and watching the arrow and how we lose ourselves in the extension. And Dan saying he has had that experience of not losing it and he's not very good at it. None of us are, but it's clear and distinct that that has occurred. Is that correct? And yeah, he's saying yes.
Actually, can I say something, David? Or you got?
No,
go ahead.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah, it's interesting because it never occurred to me before. It's been a while since I read this book, but this analogy is very useful, I think, because, you know, it's also when you are shooting the bow, when you let you shoot the arrow, you let the string go, it's going back into its ordinary, the sort of outer stable condition. That is actually the entropy. In other words, the entropic normal is for the string not to be pulled back. Now, your bow, every bow is rated, like your bow may be a 35-pound bow or a 45-pound bow. So in actuality, what Dan is referring to in this analogy, you need 35 or 45 pounds of force of your strength to pull that string back.
Yeah.
Well, so you have to do, you know, you not only is it a deliberate effort that you have to make, but it's like, you know, I actually have picked up, you know, some of these bows, and I mean, after a certain pound weight, whatever it is, I'm not prepared to pull that bow. It's like I need to actually lift weights, practice. I need to work up the muscle. I need to actually prepare myself and get ready, develop the capacity to pull that back like that. So to me, this is the key image, is that pulling back that bowstring is disidentifying, is going against the entropy of simply falling into it, of being identified. And it takes an effort. It's a very good analogy, I think.
Ivan, do you recall the Odyssey?
Funny you should say that. I thought exactly of that, because this is a very archetypal representation of this.
And tell me the key that I'm looking for.
Well,
the
great thing about this whole episode, when Odysseus returns from 20 years away from his home, he's dressed up as a beggar. He comes back to the island of Ithaca, and the deal is that there's a bow there. It's the king's bow. It's Odysseus's bow, and none of the suitor, the other people who are trying to take his wife away, the faithful Penelope, and take his kingdom, marry into this kingdom and take it over, none of them can even string this bow. It's so, what would you say? Yeah, it's such an extreme warrior's bow that none of the rivals to Odysseus can even. And they're all having, they're kind of sitting around drinking, having this contest. And then he comes as a beggar, and he says, "Oh, let me try the bow. You know, this is the trial to see who can." They have to shoot an arrow through all of these axes. Like there's a hole in the heads of the axes, and they line them all up. So not only you have to string the bow, but shoot this arrow very accurately through the. And the beggar, he's disguised as a beggar, and he says, "Let me try this." And they all just laugh, and they think it's hilarious.
And
what is this?
So from a mythical point of view, he was the only one that had the presence and attention to do that action and really restore the kingdom to the form that it needed to be in. And I bet you that's not in any commentary, Ivan, about the great, the Odyssey, which has been studied by tens of thousands, scholars. So we have a chance to do that. We have to build up the muscles, as Dan and Ivan are saying to us. We have to build our muscles up enough that we can hold the bow back and have the power to do that, which you can. But how do you build up those muscles, Harry?
I beg your pardon.
Harry. Did we go
no.
A little too soon?
Go ahead, Pat.
The top of page 4.
Oh, good. Right.
Says this invocation of presence in the present eventually produces what we call being, in the real sense of the word, pure, non-phenomenal, electromagnetic vibration resulting from, and I think this is the answer you were looking for, the blending of the two primary forces represented by passive present and the active force presence. Was that what you were asking Gary about?
No, not quite yet.
Okay.
But I forgot we had to bring this
We
in.
Have to bring this forward because otherwise we can't
no,
step
no, no,
away.
No.
Yeah.
Thank you, Pat.
Yeah.
But
can I make a comment here, Dave?
Yeah, but hang on one second. What I wanted to bring up is it says, eventually produces what we call being in the real sense of the word.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so how do you grow a soul? He's telling us.
You invoke your presence.
This is how he's telling us.
It's the
right
friction
here in
between our essence and our biological being, our biological machine.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Judy.
Yeah, the back to the bow and arrow, this pulling back is going against the resisting force. That's where you have the blending of the two forces. You have to use this tremendous, your inner strength to pull back against this force of this bow, okay? And that is the way when you shoot the arrow, that you then break through the phenomenal world. So every aspect of this, every movement of this is symbolic, even the movement we haven't talked about yet.
No question. There's so much imagery here, but I want people to feel it in their bones to get up and move like that just for one second whenever you feel like it or have a chance. And get this, what Judy is telling us, the actual sensation, and remember what it feels like for the bow rushing off into the and toward the target,
the arrow
rushes off, and then we lose ourselves in it.
The most important thing, though, is to
starting to be grounded in the presence that is being indicated. Go ahead, Judy.
The resistance comes first, to feel that denying against us, fully in our body, pulling that and feeling that sensation, that going against, and then it resolves itself in being, and the arrow goes forward.
It resolves itself in being. Okay? You know, in... go ahead.
We don't have the PA.
Okay.
But we have a playback speaker that's facing away from Ivan's mic. But it might help if you're in the studio what they're saying.
Okay, so what
so
do you want us to do?
So let's take that mic away from Ivan.
Well, okay.
Because when... If you're doing the PA...
Well, I'm not doing the PA, I'm doing the monitor.
I see.
It's not facing... I see what you're saying.
Got it.
Technical issue here.
We're upgrading technically here.
Maybe we'll let Dan speak.
I didn't realize how much was in that image of the bow and arrow.
Yeah.
But... It's so every action that's taken, if it was to be done with presence, it means pulling back the bow each and every time you're going to shoot an arrow, which is exactly what you have to do.
Yep.
And if
and
your
you
pull
have to
is...
grounded.
If,
you have
right.
to be in a grounded
yeah.
position to do it.
You have to be in a grounded position. You can hear.
Yes. But also if your pull is weak, then... your arrow is going to be ineffective.
There you go.
Hey.
No feedback.
And
I forgot your mic was
on. Oh, good. Also, Grocky has some comments.
We're listening to huge voices.
Okay.
Okay. That's a little bit lower. That's good. What's that, you guys?
Okay, Grocky says, same with Merlin and the sword and the stone and Rama and the marriage bow.
Yeah.
Or not Merlin, but Arthur. Actually, both. And then, like what the person on the phone just said, seems to be about Dharma, to be able to succeed at pulling the bow, that is serving the spirit rather than the machine.
That was Judy. Yeah. So we're
that's
in a position.
That's a nice summary, Grocky. Thank you.
Very nice. Thank you so much, Mark. That was great. So when we do this, when we do this actual thing called pulling the bow, releasing it, and yet holding on to a moment of presence, that's when we can start to build actual being. This is real stuff. You know, we look, well, how do you actually do this? You know, sounds good. I listen. I love the chanting. I like the pictures. But now, here's what you can actually do to create presence and permanent being, which we're not going to get into a huge amount yet, Judy, okay?
Yeah,
but
it's
of course,
just a matter of holding that tension. I think that's an important part of this image, is you're pulling it, you're not like boing, you're pulling it back and you're holding that tension. And that allows the two forces to resolve.
And if you've ever done this with a real bow, it's not a jerk. You can't do a jerk. It's a slow motion that you come back. But there's a lot of power in that back arm. And when you can just begin to discover that power, then you have a place to stand at that time. You have a place to stand. So for the last two times now, we've talked very distinctly about how to create this invocation of presence,
mm-hmm.
right? Last week, this week we have a very strong visual of it. And what does it do? You can begin to create permanency of being. And then he continues, Okay, in ordinary life, man, actually, you one of you guys should read.
Yeah.
Whoever would like to read. Go ahead.
In ordinary life, man is a phenomenal veil non-entity, and for him, only his fixation on phenomena exists. He cannot make being, because being is a result of the blending of two real forces. To make any vibration whatever, one must have both plus and minus forces above and below the zero point, producing a wave with a definite frequency, amplitude, and periodicity.
They go right in there. So this is where some of us have a little bit of entry into the world of sound and frequency, and you'll watch on Monday nights and see Faxel move that world around in front of us and visually demonstrate what this is saying, which is there is the point at which the resistance to making the inaudible audible occurs. But there's only a slight point, and it's that point which, if you're doing anything related to sound, you have to have all of your other self quiet, or you can't catch it. So this demonstration of the bow and the arrow and the force can also be demonstrated in this manner. Just listen. There is sound, but you can't hear it. Marvette's going to adjust the sound. Are we better now? The sound comes, but you cannot tell the difference between no sound and participating in sound unless you can be in that quiet moment. And this invocation of presence into the present is the same description. There are four parts to it. It says above and below the zero point, producing a wave with a definite frequency, amplitude, and periodicity, which if you wish to speak with Dr. Claude Needham on this subject, he is very explicit about the amplitude and the frequency and the periodicity of wave, especially in relation to beings.
And then it continues with saying, when being is produced, a definite and discernible sound and vibration are emitted from the organism. And this is these individuals who are advanced, there's an emanation that occurs, and that's, there's a remarkable effect that that has. There's a specific emanation, and that's what we notice. And when we're, for us beginners, we're given an idea of how to begin to produce it, how to begin to, that's all we're worried about at the moment. We're not trying to be anything other than that.
Pat referred to Faxel on Monday night and producing sound, and I wanted to direct people to the practice that they did not this past Monday, which was, see, the 5th, but the Monday before that, which I think was the 31st.
Okay.
Can you check, Dan?
The 28th, I think.
28th. It was Monday, the last.
The previous Monday.
Yeah. And there's. It can be checked on live stream under the event of Faxel, the 29th, and toward the very end of the practice, within the last 15 minutes, there was a song. It's called the Holy Hobo Roundup, but you might miss the title. But the words within the song, Ilaha, Ilahu, are very noticeable. And that song, you can check what the vibration and the resonance of that song will have. He also wanted it put on, he wanted to put on YouTube a song earlier in that practice, which is Everybody Wants a Piece of God.
Yeah.
And so anyways, I would recommend that to see if you can feel anything about those songs.
So feeling, all of us need to get used to the feeling and sensation of what it's like. And I mean, that's what we call.
Yeah.
We're getting used to the sensation of this within our body.
Yeah.
And like we talked last week, people can do that if you help them focus on it. So we can do it too. And one way to do it is have this strong image in your mind of pulling the bow. You pull the bow back, you can realize the effort that it takes to get into that, and we can do stronger and stronger bows as we advance a bit. Okay? There's two other... Okay, there's two other big points I want to make before we move on to next week, but I'm going to try to get there. Unfortunately, I'm going to drop down to the very bottom of the left-hand column,
sure.
And it says, to attain permanent existence for our being. What is it saying next?
Ooh.
Hang on. Sorry. Terry?
Yes.
Can you read the next phrase?
Thank you.
He held one hand. Is that what you're referring to?
No. No. Now I'm on page 4.
That's where
Look
I am.
Look at the bottom of the left-hand column. It
okay.
starts with the words, to attain permanent
right.
existence. You got it?
I do.
Okay.
To attain permanent existence for our being. We must invoke our presence many thousand times. You have the data now to decide if self-invocation will be a profitable enterprise for you before you waste too much of your precious time. Should you wish to continue, you will quickly learn that self-invocation requires a definite degree of force. Not force in the ordinary sense, but as it would be understood in certain forms of martial arts and in certain religious gatherings.
Okay, stop there, please. So, where have you heard this phrase before, Harry? You must invoke many thousands of times.
Well, it's not an event. It's a process that takes place over time. It's not like
Good.
You go down to the 7-Eleven and pick up a six-pack of it and you're done. I mean,
a six-pack of presents and intentions.
I'd like about 5 ounces or $3 worth of presents.
I'll have
and
the
you
big
walk
gulp.
Out with it. A big gulp. I mean, that's not how it works. You have to earn it, actually, and practice it many times. And there'll be times when it's, you know, in the Hesychast tradition, they say your prayer is dry. But after a while, it will become and quickened again, and you'll make progress. But it's dependent upon our effort.
Harry and I are familiar with a book called The Way of the Pilgrim, which was written out of the Eastern Orthodox tradition. And in particular, this book had to do with a voyager whose circumstance and life's changed, and he walks out into the world to try to answer what Paul meant in 1 Thessalonians, where he says, pray without ceasing.
Yeah.
That's all. Just, I mean, everybody knows how to pray, right? Not bad. You can just pray. I'll pray now. But could it possibly mean pray without ceasing?
Well, it means you can't be praying for a Mercedes-Benz or a color TV, for one thing.
What Mercedes-Benz?
You have to pray for something you don't have.
Well, actually, no.
You have to pray, period. There can be nothing after the period.
Yeah, pray without ceasing means to be in a state of prayer. Without ceasing. Well, it's the state that you're in.
So this guy, in this book, he says to the great guru, he says, yeah, but, you know, what if you're in court and you're arguing a big case and it's complicated and your customer and your da-da-da-da, how could you possibly do it? And the guy just shakes his hand, pray without ceasing. But what if you're doing this? What if that's pray without ceasing? And what is the method that this particular voyager found, Harry, and how did he resolve this commentary?
Well, he allowed the prayer to become the beating of his own heart.
Which
so
prayer?
The prayer of Jesus.
So he's working with something called the Jesus Prayer.
That is correct.
And this is what he was given. And if you read the text from the Philokalia that Ivan was going to talk about earlier, it is the closest to, in the Christian tradition, of the Eastern forms of meditation. They talk about how to sit and hold your body and how to breathe, things like that, while you're doing this prayer of Jesus, which I recall, it says, correct me if I'm wrong, Harry, it's like, Lord Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy on me.
Usually they add a sinner to the end of it, but you don't.
A couple of years I dropped the phrase, a miserable sinner. It was a little too heavy for me. So correct, I'm not saying it wasn't correct. So then he says, yeah, but I always forget. And one of the guys said, and I didn't look it up, Harry, that you have to say it 100,000 times, or some huge number.
I mean, these guys are practicing a form of mantra yoga, and they're combining it with their breath, and then with the beat of their heart, so that the prayer murmurs like their heartbeat.
Murmurs like their heartbeat. And so that's the chance we have. We have that opportunity being offered to us here where he says a thousands of times.
I missed something, Harry.
Go ahead, Harry. I'm sorry.
Well, then the prayer says itself. You don't actually say it anymore. It says you. The only thing that I had, my experiences was limited to training with an Orthodox deacon who was getting his doctorate in Russian literature at UT, whom I kept running into literally on campus, downtown, out in a shopping center. And so finally he said, maybe we should meet each other. And when we did, it was a very remarkable experience. And he proceeded to teach me how to do this prayer. And I trained with him for a year until he left. It was not what I had expected, I can tell you that.
And we recall that though he's taken a break for the moment, George would say that every day he sets a period of time aside to do virtually this exercise.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? Every day, that's his practice. When you start doing this enough, what will happen is you'll start to miss it. You'll miss the sense of presence. If it's not there, you'll miss it. And you'll start looking around for it. And you'll realize, oh, right. And it reminds yourself to come back to it. How are we doing over there?
Bernie says, this exercise proves that action is superior to thinking.
Who said this?
Bernie LaPlante.
Okay.
Antimatter says, through continual remembering, the prayer becomes woven into your body, breath, and heart.
go.
EJ also speaks of becoming an organic prayer wheel.
Oh, how interesting.
And Grocki says, it seems that a possible part of praying without ceasing is the bhakti yoga practice of offering everything to the Absolute or the benefit of all beings everywhere. Then, even if we may not remember in the moment, while in a court case or whatever, the fact that it is all being offered up still constitutes prayer and invocation. Seems the idea is keeping the channel open.
And you keep the channel open. Very good. Very nice. Those are great comments. And you keep the channel open by pulling back on the bow. You just keep working the bow. And you do it thousands of times. So let's just say that each time you do it, it puts one penny in the bank, in your essence bank. Just one penny.
Mm-hmm.
And after a while, then there's two pennies, right? 10,000s of times,
right,
you can start to actually notice it. There's a lot more in the paragraphs that we're skipping, and I know that, okay, and I'm conscious of that, but I want to just put our attention on one more important paragraph, which is right below the break, and it says, man is educated. Do you see that?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, are we caught up there? What's that?
You just got to get him to retire.
Are we still online?
Yeah. That's the last of the comments. There was another one, but it looks like it was deleted. So.
Okay. Well, so man is educated to fall into his outer world just as he falls into a cinema screen. We're educated to do that. We're always going to do it. And we have good reason to go, oh, I have to pay attention to that thing out there. I have to pay attention to my dog or my child or my brother or my wife or uncle or whatever. I have to. Yeah, maybe you do have to, right? That doesn't mean you have to give up your attention, your presence. That's the only thing he's telling us here. This is like amazing stuff, guys. It's like, yeah, you have to do that. You know, maybe you're a professional football player, a professional baseball player. That doesn't mean you have to give up your presence when you're performing these remarkably complex activities. Okay? How are we doing there, Judy?
We're doing fine. I just want to make a comment about this vibration. It's very important that we understand that the vibration that we're creating is in the heart region. Okay? It's not a sexual thing.
Absolutely. This is a, not at all.
Okay.
First of all, you have to go back a few paragraphs to where it says the sensation of presence. You know, that was on the other page, the very bottom where it says the, just go ahead and read it.
Yeah. And also, in combining this prayer with what he's talking about with the forces and present and the fact that we're a tripartite being. And I'll write this in the chat box. There was Russian Staritz, which means a holy man, who became a saint, Saint Theophan the Recluse. He's referred to
most
in Beelzebub's Tales by Gurdjieff. And he wrote a book which was translated called The Heart of Salvation. And it puts all of this together. It's really an incredible book. So I'll put that in there for people to take.
Thank you.
Look.
And post it on
Facebook
for those there, please. Because that's who I mostly have writings from, by the way. Theophan the Recluse.
Yeah.
They have names like Theophan the Recluse. So, you know,
pretty amazing.
And John of the desert there. So, but what I was getting back to was that other paragraph. Go ahead and read that at the bottom.
This other hand represents presence, becoming, for the first time, aware of its presence in the present by drawing away from identification with events by observing impartially and at the same time using subjective organic sensations to sense its own definite presence in the present. These are actually all aspects of one thing, but they're being looked at under a microscope or a magnifying glass to highlight various aspects so you can try and grasp the whatever part of it that for you is accessible to you. So if it's the doing the whole minute, two whole minutes without interruption of the sensing of the presence of I, that's one stimulation. Then there's the bow and arrow physical pose where you've got your manifestation, your machine, taking on what it is that you wish for yourself. And then you have these other aspects here. When we get a little further on, there's an actual formulation that's verbal. These are all just places where you can enter into what this exercise is. Any one of them will do it for you, whichever one works. But there's many of them that are described in various different ways. And they
right
all relate
material.
They all relate to the same event, invoke the presence of your presence into the present. And as a description, this description has so much content as to the elements that are present, the forces that are necessary, the structure in which it occurs, the relationship and the consequences with the outer world, and on and on and on. I mean, this 12 or 15 paragraphs that we've looked at tonight have the content of, you know, massive chemistry and biology and microphysics books about how things exist in the universe. That's the content of what is here, what's being referred to, not in detail, of course. But the exercise itself, an exercise is only as good as how often you do it and whatever you do with it.
Thank you, that's exactly right. And one of the characteristics that I recall is a vibratory characteristic. As we get a little cleaner and a little lighter on our feet, we'll be able to notice it in that manner. Very, very, that becomes, for some of us, is the primary way you look at things eventually.
Antimatter says, the prayer of remembering can continue on into the dream state, in my experience.
Yeah, good. There's no question about it. It's funny, if you've done something like this, Jesus prayer or something like that a lot, to find it in your dreams, when you're awake, you're in your dream and you see it appearing there. That's an interesting phenomena that occurs.
Graki reminds us that EJ says visiting the ashram every day, the virtual ashram, that constitutes a kind of prayer of keeping the channel open.
And it's good because when you go into the ashram, you bring your best game.
Yeah.
You can't bring your discarded self. You bring your best game because you're there with people of a different caliber. The last point I wanted to make is this part of the exercise, we're speaking about it here in general terms, but for every individual, it is particular. It's how you sense your presence. What is it like for you has nothing to do with what it is like for me, or for Pat, or for Ivan, or anybody else who's working on it. What is it like for you, and can you get familiar with that so it's second nature to you? There are parts of this kind of work, many parts of this kind of work, that you're on your own. Thank God from occasion you can find colleagues, but the work is done on your own. You deepen it on your own, and then you bring it to the gathering of meal that we have together. Okay? Is everybody okay with that, or do we need to go into that sensing? Do you sense it? Is it an operable idea for us, Ivan? Go ahead.
I think this is good what you've just said, because yes, okay, I thought what you just said brings to mind that phrase in there about the subjective sensing of the organism.
Yeah.
So that's going to be the individual or the personal aspect of this. And there is a subjective element.
Very much a subjective element. And
that's a discussion that you have after you put in a couple hundred or thousand times, that you get the sense of that interactive or contradictory, or however you experience it, the subjective hold on the objective wish, where those things are at in you, how they work. That I think that's sometimes when you run those poetry classes, sometimes you touch in that arena. How do you speak truth? How do you state the honest from the moment when you are present with whatever it is? And I think again, the use of music, the use of poetry, the use of any of these manifested forms of experienced presence, these are things that you can use to help you connect yourself with your aim, with your wish. Then you put in the time and the experience, and you draw on that to go further with it. It's a self-feeding system. You feed it from yourself, and yourself gets fed by it. Does that make sense?
It's very much exactly what it is.
It's just,
and you'll start to miss it when it's not there. You'll enjoy being in that. No matter what you're doing, no matter what you're, even if you're in what appears to be conflict,
mm-hmm.
you can still be in that space and feed it. It feeds you, you strengthen. Just a little bit at a time, that's all we're saying. Just a little bit more. To get a sense for yourself, what is it for you
mm-hmm.
when you're standing in that place? Yeah. And build on that. And that's what we'll work with together more as we develop. We get ourselves somehow, miraculously, out of chapter one into chapter two.
Oh,
which
really?
May or may not ever occur in this particular lifetime.
I didn't know about that.
But that's where we're headed. So.
Well, it's good doing it with all of our others.
It is.
With us.
We are slow readers, but that's okay. And we'll look forward to seeing you again next Wednesday.
That's right.
At 7 o'clock. Thank
that's
you
right.
for coming.
Thank you for
Thank
being
you,
here.
Everyone.
Good night, everyone.
Good night.
Good night.
Bye bye. See you, Judy. Bye, Harry.